right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. This one is going to be insane. Not to get everybody too hyped up or anything, but I'm personally very excited. This is the preeminent scientist and doctor in artificial intelligence, who is the founder and the CEO of SingularityNet, something I've been very excited about for a long time. Dr. Ben Goertzel is joining us on the podcast. A true pleasure to have you, doctor.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
Man, AI has gotten a whole lot of talk to start the year. And you've been doing this for decades now at this point. You famously invented, the Sophia robot and among many other systems. And so I would love to just do a quick introduction on who you are before we dive into the specifics of AGIX and the future of artificial intelligence married with blockchain.
Sure thing. So I got my PhD in actually mathematics in the 1980s, but I've been interested in AI since well before that, really since discovering it in science fiction stories and that TV shows in the early 1970s when I was a kid. But I've been doing AI research actively since I was a grad student in the 80s. And indeed, the AI field has come a long way since then, right? So, I mean, when I started in the field, there was some AI in industry, mostly in military, a little bit in Wall Street, but not so much. I was an academic for 10 years in math, computer science, and then cognitive science, the study of human cognition. And from the late 90s onward, I've been developing AI applications for industry, a bunch of stuff in national security and in finance and robotics with the Sophia robots and other humanoid robots, in functional genomics and AI for clinical medicine data, and in applying AI across all these areas. Always I had in my mind, for now the AI is our tool, but before long the AI is going to be more capable than people are. So I coined the term artificial general intelligence and introduced that in the book in, I guess it was 2004. And I've been working on trying to grow a research community around the notion of AGI, artificial general intelligence, which now, partly due to my efforts, more so just due to the way the world has evolved, now that's a big thing, right? And you've got CEOs of major companies and national
leaders. Yeah, everybody's talking about AGI.
Really thinking about artificial general intelligence and not just about narrow AIs that do highly particular things. The closer we seem to get to real AGIs, to machines that can generalize beyond their programming and history and make creative leaps like humans can, and ultimately better than humans can, like the closer we get to that, the more the governance and ownership and regulation and influence of AI as it gets smarter and smarter seems like an important thing. So I wrote a book in 2001 called Creating Internet Intelligence, where I was proposing we had to make a strongly encrypted, decentralized control network for AIs running on computers all around the planet. And I was sort of struggling toward what later would come to be called blockchain, right? And that my wife, Ray Ting, who I got together with in, I guess, 2009, she dug up online a webpage I made in 1995 where I was proposing to run for U.S. president on the decentralization party platform, right? So this, I'm now that I'm older and wiser, I've realized being president would be a horrible job, and I completely don't want it anymore. But it was interesting looking back, like, 95, I was all about we have to decentralize everything because as AI gets smarter and smarter, if it's not decentralized, it's going to be owned by parties who we don't really want to own it and who are going to be corruptible in predictable ways. So, I mean, it's with this in mind, I got into blockchain heavily in 2017 and co-founded SingularityNet, which aims to be a sort of decentralized fabric for both AI applications and then as it emerges for general intelligence, because I mean, you need decentralization in the AI sphere even more badly than you need it in the domain of finance. And that sort of brings us to the present. And right now, you know, in 2017, I think with our initial launch of SingularityNet, we brought to the public mind the idea that you could put AI and blockchain together. But now in 2023, there's more recognition in the community at large, like, well, we really need to put AI and blockchain together. And the importance of this seems more obvious to people as AI starts to do more and more stuff.
Yeah, it seems like AI, I mean, there's so many different questions I have, but like, it seems like it really blew up in 2023, January. Everybody started playing with ChatGPT, like, you know, this fastest app to get a million users, and everybody kind of realized, oh my gosh, you know, I could type in anything and it's, you know, a very conversational, smart bot. And then people started playing with Stable Diffusion and saying I could type a ballerina with a pen and it'll spit out imaging for that. And then I think people from, you know, in 2021 and 22 maybe thinking like, what is AI? Is it just math that's going to help people do things quick? Like, you know, it didn't really make sense. There was nothing concrete behind it. But now the consumer, you know, has been infatuated with it because now there's these apps that now AI isn't a back end feature, it's a front end feature. And so I want to kind of get your perspective on this. Do you see this inflection point as well, or am I crazy?
It's very clearly an inflection point in public enthusiasm for AI. I think it's also an inflection point in certain AI capabilities that are interesting. I think it's not yet the biggest inflection point. Like we're not yet to general intelligences, but it's certainly really, really quite interesting progress. And I think it's, you can talk about it from a sort of industry structure and politics and ownership view, and you can talk about it from a AI research and development view, and I think they're both important. So from an AI R&D view, what I would say is systems like DALL-E, Stable Diffusion, ChatGPT, you know, Google Lambda / Bard, and so forth, these systems kind of bypass the need for generalization by having such a humongous training data set. So what we're after in trying to build real thinking machines is AIs that can leap beyond the information they were fed, leap beyond their experience and deal with the great unknown, which
got it.
Humans do. We fuck up a lot, but we are ultimately able to do that. Like I can deal with the internet, which didn't exist when I was born or went to school, right? And then, on the other hand, a system like a Stable Diffusion or ChatGPT, it can do a lot of things, but not because it's able to leap beyond its training data, rather because it's trained on like everything on the internet, which is a huge scope of knowledge, right? So it's really useful. It's really cool. These systems will eliminate a substantial fraction of human jobs, which is obviously amazingly economically impactful. I don't think it's exactly a direct step toward AGI, because it's really about leveraging this humongous body of training data rather than is about leaping beyond your experience. But I think it can be used to accelerate progress toward AGI. So one thing we're working on in SingularityNet is basically train a large language model like a GPT-3, which is the model underlying ChatGPT, train it to output everything it knows in a structured logical format that you can feed into an AI reasoning engine. And so in that way, you could use this model to feed into the mind of a logical reasoning system, which can then reason about it together with its own experience, which it sees through robots and cameras and that analysis of data sets and so forth. So I think there's ways like that that you can leverage what these large language models are doing to accelerate AGI, even though they're not AGI. And so we're working on our own AGI approach, which is called OpenCog Hyper, on the latest version of the longstanding open source OpenCog AI system. We're working on that. That's underlying the Sophia robot and Grace and Desdemona, which are Sophia's little sister robots. And we're working at how do you use the knowledge learned by large language models like a ChatGPT to inject directly into the brain of the OpenCog system, which can then reason and generalize, right? Wow. So that's part of my view on the AI underlying these things. So it is a breakthrough. It's a really cool breakthrough. It's a breakthrough in a somewhat different direction than you need for AGI. Then you can try to creatively leverage that to boost AGI development. From an industry structure perspective, it's a bit weirder when you look at OpenAI. Like OpenAI was founded as a sort of open source think tank, right? Like let's build AI separate from big tech companies for the good of the world in a nonprofit sort of open source vein, right? So now they should change the name to Closed AI, right? Because they're no longer open sourcing.
Yeah, didn't Microsoft buy them?
Everything they do. And they've entered into extremely close, almost but not quite, ownership relationship with Microsoft, right? Now, why did they do that? Not because they fell in love with Microsoft, although, I mean, very high-quality company in many ways. And living here in Seattle area, I know a lot of amazing Microsofties, right? But, I mean, they did that because it cost insane amounts of money to train these machine learning models, right? I mean, that's tens of millions of dollars of computer time, possibly hundreds of millions, and hard for a startup, even when funded by Elon Musk, to get all the money they need to train models. So they got $1 billion from Microsoft. Now they're getting $29 billion more or something. So you've got a scenario where AI is advancing really fast, but it's taking a lot of money to drive this advancement, right? So like SingularityNet, you know, we did a $36 million ICO in 2017, but what is that compared to $29 billion from Microsoft into OpenAI, right? So, I mean, it's a very interesting moment in a bunch of ways for the development of AI, I would say. And I think the decentralized community can succeed and prevail and take the lead in AI, but it will take some clever footwork on the economic as well as the technical side, given the huge cost of training these large language models that have affected the current AI revolution.
And are all those costs, are those just pure like compute? Are you saying like it just takes so much energy to run any given query?
Yeah, it's all just boosting global warming and speeding up the heat death of the universe, right? I mean, this is just paying server farms with massive multi-GPU servers. That's when you say like GPT-3 costs $10 million in computer time to train. That's not the salaries of the people either. I mean, that's just paying for the GPU time at standard rates.
Man, yeah, I had no idea about this demarcation between AI and AGI, and so it's really good to understand that differentiation and that you're really, you know, focused on building artificial generalized intelligence.
Yeah, I mean, SingularityNet is a platform that can support narrow AI carrying out highly specific tasks like, you know, helping distort an image or helping you do your taxes or analyze your DNA data or predict a stock price, right? Oh, wow. So SingularityNet as a platform can support narrow AI apps or it can serve as an infrastructure for developing artificial general intelligence. And I mean, both both are important and interesting. As a researcher, my deepest interest is in AGI, because as you know, another mathematician, I.J. Goode, said in 1965, the first truly intelligent machine will be the last invention humanity has to make, right? Like if you if you can really get to AGI, then you don't need to make up these other applications. The AGI will do it for you. On the other hand, that's a few years off, even if optimistic projections are right. So there's still a use for AI doing practical things today.
Mm-hmm. Was the impetus for making and creating and founding AGI-X or SingularityNet, was the main reason to have that decentralized governance body over this, you know, potentially last invention we'll ever need? Or was it really more you wanted this platform?
No, the main reason in my heart for founding SingularityNet was I think my team working on OpenCog Hyperon after a few more years is going to make the breakthrough to machines that can really think like people, or and then even better than people. The machine will understand its own source code and start reprogramming its own source code. And, you know, this is difficult research, but we've been working on this a long time, and we're getting better and better machines and infrastructure for deploying our ideas. We're working on custom hardware for this also, a custom AGI chip together with the company Simulai in Florida. So my main motivation for SingularityNet ultimately was, once you make the breakthrough to AGI, where does it get deployed? Like, do you deploy it on AWS? Then ultimately Amazon has control over it, right? I mean, it's right. going to take a bunch of machines. So you, is it deployed in one particular country? Then that government will try to seize it from you as soon as it achieves greater than human level in intelligence. And some thugs will come into your house, put a gun to your head and say, make the AGI do what I said, right? It seemed like the only viably beneficial way would be to have it be more like Linux operating system. Have the first AGI running on, you know, a million machines running across every country on the globe with open source code and replicated all over the place and governed by a DAO that doesn't require any one person to control it. And if the breakthrough to AGI happens in this sort of setting, I mean, then people just have to deal with it, just like they just have to deal with Linux and with the TCP/IP protocol underlying the internet, right? Like right. North Korea and Iran run Linux, and they communicate using the internet, no matter what other governments want, right? So no one has managed to take hegemony over those things.
Interesting.
So that indeed was my primary driving motivation. On the other hand, to make a platform that's viable to host your AGI once you have the breakthrough, you need to do something with that platform in the interim, right? And so rolling out practical tools doing useful things on the SingularityNet platform in the years while we work on our AGI makes sense from a variety of perspectives, right? I mean, it gets token utilization, which then builds the economic value of the network. And it also helps you hone the software code of the platform in a way that you can only get through actual utilization.
Yeah, and that brings me up to an awesome point here on that note. Could you tell us a little bit about that AGIX token and really how does it function to be a key piece of securing the network?
Yeah, I mean, the AGIX token is the general purpose utility token of the SingularityNet network. And SingularityNet is a network of AI processes or agents, each of which carries out some intelligent function, like looking for patterns in a data set or carrying out reasoning based on some premises or generating an image based on what the user requested or looking for the future of a time series. All these AI agents in SingularityNet can communicate together and talk to each other. And they can not only do work for customers, they can do work for each other. The AI agents in the network can talk to each other and outsource work to each other, collaborate on problems. So the AGIX token it's used to pay AI agents on the network for their work, for external agents to pay, but also for the agents to pay each other. It's also used for rating and reputation within the network. So if some agent wants to say another AI agent did a really good job on something, then you can give a positive reputation rating to the other agent, and you also attach a few AGIX tokens to that, because we found through a bunch of study of reputation systems that if you have reputation rating without some financial aspect along with the ratings, people just scam the rating system ridiculously. So you don't want to have money be the reputation rating. What you want to have is agents can rate others as to how good they were, and they have to put a little money behind that rating. And then you can get an efficient reputation and rating system, which is very important, because when agents are outsourcing work to other agents in the network, I mean, they need to know which ones are high quality to outsource to. So yeah, AGIX is for payment, and that serves then other functions like part of the reputation and rating system as well. And we launched originally on Ethereum. We now have a version of AGIX that's on Cardano network, and we're building our own base level blockchain called Hypercycle. And so before long, we'll have a flavor of AGIX token on the Hypercycle network as well, because we found Cardano, it's much faster and cheaper and more secure than Ethereum, but it doesn't go quite as far as we need for building a sort of decentralized on-chain global brain. So we're Hypercycle, which is starting out as a Cardano side chain. Hypercycle will be way faster and cheaper than Cardano and customized for AI applications, but it should tightly interlink with Cardano through the Hydra interface.
Wow.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Now there's a lot of societal effects of AI and AGI, more particularly in terms of jobs, all sorts of different stuff. Could you kind of tell us a little bit about maybe your philosophy on AGI and AI, the societal effects of that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think the need to work for a living sucks. It should be obsoleted. I'm happy it will be obsoleted. So, yeah, I mean, I think that within 5 to 10 years, majority of human jobs will be gone, and I think
that's a short time frame.
By and large. Yeah, it's a short time frame, right? And you can see the promise of ChatGPT and Stable Diffusion and so forth. Like, the raw material is there to obsolete so many white-collar jobs. Mm-hmm. But there's also the raw material to sort of synergize together with stuff that's already done for physical automation of tasks. And so, I mean, we already have the technology to automate so many more things than are automated, right? Like, there's no reason that McDonald's can't be fully automated.
Seriously.
We have the tech to do that.
It'd be way better, too.
And in Asia, most McDonald's are more automated than in the U.S. But so, I mean, rolling out technology takes more time in some job categories than others, right? So, I mean, I know some friends of mine made a company, Apprente, that was sold to McDonald's 3 or 4 years ago, maybe. And when they automated the voice recognition problem behind the McDonald's drive through. And now their software is finally getting rolled out in various McDonald's in the Midwest and in the US, but it's not everywhere yet, right? So there's just some friction. There's some lag time once the problem is solved to deploying it. But in many white collar jobs, that friction is less, right? Because I mean, McDonald's, it's just there's physical machines that need to be replaced. Each one is a separately owned franchise, so there's a bunch of physical complexities there. With many white collar jobs, it's much less so, right? You've got employees largely working from home now, like from a laptop over the internet. There's not such big obstacles to actually obsoleting those jobs. So I think the speed with which graphic design is being obsolete is one example, right? I mean, all of a sudden, so many people are just writing prompts for DALL-E and Stable Diffusion rather than hiring a graphic designer. And now it's true they're not as creative as Picasso or Kandinsky, right? But on the other hand, for coming up with art for your poster, you don't need someone who's as creative as Picasso or Kandinsky. You just need to repermute stuff that's you're using clip art and touching it up in Photoshop anyway, right? So
yeah.
So that I think that's an example of how fast a job category can be like completely demolished when you're not dealing with physical machinery. So what I think will happen economically, I think in the developed world, after a bunch of chaos, it will all be fine. Like I think we're going to get a universal basic income or some variation of that in the U.S., Western Europe, and the wealthier countries of Asia, Australasia, and so forth. Like I don't really believe in the end, like the U.S. people will allow half the U.S. population to be starving out in the street. Like I think it's not going to happen. What worries me more is no one will give universal basic income to the average subsistence farmer in Senegal or the Central African Republic, right? So, but the need to outsource work to these countries will go away. And like in the outskirts of Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, you got these factories where Ethiopian people are basically gluing together pieces of shoes to sell in Africa, where the pieces of the shoe are largely coming from China. That's going to be robotized quite soon. It's going to be cheaper to have robots do that than to have Ethiopian people do that, right? So
is AI and these sort of things that you're describing, is that deflationary inherently? Because it's like you don't need to pay a robot; it doesn't need to take a break.
It would be generically deflationary if the economy weren't so completely manipulated and screwed up, which it is, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, if you didn't have a heavily financialized global economy with Wall Street and Chinese government and Russian mafia and everyone playing various games with money supplies, it would be heavily deflationary. But, yeah. I mean, how it actually will play out in reality can be a whole other story, right? Because, I mean, the whole idea that basically none of monetary theory works in reality, right? I mean, like in crypto, you have people always saying, well, if the supply of this token is increased, then the value per token will go down. But it's never worked that way, right? Like if you statistically look at the history of real world economies or crypto world economies, there's basically no evidence that in real practice increasing money supply causes inflation, right? So, I mean, the things you would think logically occur in terms of money don't usually occur in reality because of mass psychology and corrupt manipulation and then changes in technology and all sorts of other factors, right? So, but yeah, intrinsically it would be radically, radically deflationary, but how hard will central banks work to make it inflationary instead is a different question. Like we've seen a lot of work to artificially cause inflation in the U.S. recently, right? So but I think what happens when you have 1.5 billion almost starving subsistence farmers with no way to make money, and then the rest of the world living on universal basic income, while maybe a million rich people around the world get richer and richer and richer from owning the robot factories and the AI server farms. I mean, this seems
this is
like
the trajectory.
It seems like a scenario ripe for a whole bunch of crazy techno thriller actions or something, right? Like, I mean,
yeah.
There's going to be a lot of motivation for some of these black hat hacker kids of starving African subsistence farmers to hack into the power grids and military servers of developed countries, right? I mean, there's going to be a lot of potential for mayhem in, let's say, the few years before AGI becomes so smart that it removes scarcity altogether from the picture. Because, I mean, if once you have a machine that's like 100 times smarter than people, and once you have a machine that's like 1.1 times as smart as people, it's going to study its own source code and make itself 1.5 times smarter of people. Then it will study its own source code and make itself 5 times as smart as people. So once you have a machine that's slightly cleverer than people, you're going to get a machine that's a lot cleverer than people. Then if that machine is well disposed toward people, it could create essentially utopia on Earth at very little effort to itself, if it likes us and if it felt like it, right? And can also offer us the opportunity to enhance our intelligence and fuse into its superhuman mind. So you got like science fiction up the wazoo, right? But then even if this rosy future comes about, there's going to be a few years of really insane and difficult chaos as the global economy adapts. In principle, blockchain and the cryptocurrency world should be able to help with this. I mean, in its present state, it wouldn't be much help. And you can see an analogy with the pandemic, right? Like in principle, blockchain should have been really helpful in managing COVID in a number of ways. Like you should have been able to do track and trace of infection in a secure, non-corruptible way using blockchain-based apps. And, you know, my own team developed AI-based simulation models of COVID spread, and we tried to get various governments to adapt these to figure out when they really need to lock down or when they didn't. And the truth was usually they didn't. You could have gotten away with other things like give people some incentive tokens for shopping close to your house instead of somewhere else or something, right? So there were a lot of ways crypto could have helped with the pandemic. In the end, it was almost completely useless, not because good prototypes weren't built or the ideas weren't there, just when the shit hit the fan, things were run by governments who were just too stupid to even think about adopting something innovative, right? So
yeah.
Then the question is, if global economic systems go into chaos because 3/4 of the world population is out of work as AI advances toward AGI, will crypto be well enough developed and the blockchain infrastructure be well enough developed to actually help, right? And without having to ask governments to help it help, right? So right now, it's not quite, right? But if people in both the developed and developing world were using crypto-based payment systems and messaging systems and we're using, you know, decentralized versions of ChatGPT and even smarter systems to help them answer their questions and understand what's going on. I mean, you could have a scenario where crypto helped the world transition through this crisis. On the other hand, governments may try their best to stop this from happening. So it's going to be quite interesting times, right? And I mean, we're trying in SingularityNet not just to work on building the AGI, but in various vertical market specific spin-offs that we're rolling out and spinning off from SingularityNet, we're trying to create tools that can be useful even as the world goes crazy in the last few years before the singularity. But I mean, how successful that will be, we'll see.
And so when you refer to Singularity, I was actually going to ask you this before and say, how did you come up with the name SingularityNet? But what is that? What is the singularity? Is it when that AGI becomes pervasive?
So the technological singularity was a term coined by the science fiction writer Werner Vinge many decades ago and popularized by the futurist Ray Kurzweil, who now works on AI at Google, one of their many AI teams. It basically refers to a point in human history when the rate of technological advance becomes so fast that it feels to human beings like it's basically instantaneous. Like imagine your phone is making 10 Nobel Prize worthy discoveries every second, right? I mean, then you're in a domain where the speed of human thought is basically irrelevant, and that's the technological singularity. So if you plotted a curve of the advance of technology, it's been advancing exponentially. Eventually, it starts to look almost vertical. Now, it's not really going to get fully vertical and have an infinite rate of advance unless all of our physics is wrong, right? But it can be advancing so fast it looks like an infinite rate to the human mind. And if you look at Ray Kurzweil's book, The Singularity Is Near, from 2005, or his book, The Age of Spiritual Machines, which might have been 97 or something. I mean, he makes an argument that we're going to get, just by plotting curves of the advance of different sorts of technology, just the cost of sequencing DNA and brain imaging, making little motors and long-lasting batteries and AI systems. He makes an argument we're likely to get to human-level AI by 2029. Wow. And then a singularity some years after that. And I think that's looking plausible to me. I mean, I'm pushing to make it even faster than that. But I mean, that looks like 2029 is more likely than 2059 or 2500. I mean, it's here. Like AI is really picking up speed, right? So anyway, Singularity Net was supposed to be the network that helps catalyze the emergence of the technological singularity, which then the center of this is AGI, but then there's going to be applications, across the board in every vertical area. So for example, in medicine, we have a SingularityNet ecosystem project called Rejuve, which is using decentralized AI to crunch medical data that members upload through the Rejuve app. And Rejuve is launching their app and their token in a couple of weeks, actually. Then we have an ecosystem project called Jam Galaxy, which it's a tokenomic ecosystem for music. So you get musicians to upload their songs, their tracks, both whole songs and unmixed tracks, with each individual instrument separated out. They upload their music into the network. They get some tokens for uploading their music. Network members can listen to that music like on a streaming app, but you pay with tokens. But also AI models running on SingularityNet model all of that music to learn how to automatically be music producers and automatically generate their own music, right?
So that's crazy.
In each of these cases, you see like AI running on a decentralized network using AGIX token is crunching all this data, but it's also providing alternate economic mechanisms to the regular economy, right? Like you're providing medical insights outside the standard medical system. You're bypassing the Spotify's and Apple Music and so forth to connect musicians with listeners with AI outside the big music label and streaming service system. So I think, so going back to the point we discussed in the very beginning here of this call, the recent AI breakthroughs are taking a lot of money to train mm-hmm. these machine learning models, and they're taking a lot of data. The fact that Google and Microsoft have the whole web on hand to help train models because of their search engines mm-hmm. is helpful. to do better than these guys in the decentralized ecosystem, we need not only better AI algorithms, which I think we have with OpenCog, but we also need huge amount of processing power and a huge amount of data, right? So that we have a Singularity Net ecosystem project called NuNet, which we spun off last year, that has its own NTX token. That lets anyone around the world put their computing processors into a global compute network. Then Jam Galaxy aims to get music data in, right? Rejuve aims to get medical data in. We have something called Mindplex that gets text data in. So we're aiming to aggregate processing power, aggregate data, put them in a decentralized network with our algorithms, put them on a super efficient infrastructure with Hypercycle. Then you have a whole decentralized tech stack that can outdo what the big tech companies are doing, putting algorithms, data, processor, and people together. But it's a lot of pieces to yeah. connect, right? Which is why it's taking us a number of years to get it all together.
Yeah. And you know, when I think of the incumbent, you know, the main incumbent that comes to my mind is, you know, Google, right? And a lot of people are starting to talk, you know, Google might be on its way out. I saw one of their co-founders came out and was writing his first line of code in like a decade for Google. And the whole, AI, consumer fire that has caught steam right now is really lighting a fire under their tushies. Do you think that they're strongly moated enough?
Yeah, I mean, Google's not going to go away any more than IBM went mm-hmm. away, right? But on the other hand, clearly the era where ads on search is an infinite money engine is about to end. Yeah. And Google long ago ceased to become a source of innovation, and they've only innovated by acquiring companies for a really long time now, right? So yeah, I think we're entering a phase of a few years where, you know, these internet era big tech companies are going to get disintermediated in the same way that they did to their predecessors, right? So, I mean, just like Honeywell and Wang and all these mainframe companies from the 70s are gone, only IBM pivoted and survived, but they're not the force they used to be, right? So it's clear the big tech companies, they're losing their hegemony. The question is whether the decentralized world can get its shit together fast enough to fill in that gap, right? And I mean, I'm hoping the time is ripe for that. But we've got to run really fast to make it so, because the infrastructure is still a bit iffy compared to the centralized infrastructure in terms of speed, cost, and robustness.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking about just like the development speed for an organization like Singularity Net relative to a centralized, competitor, if you will. Like, you know, in a decentralized scenario, lots of things on what to develop kind of goes to a vote to the community and all that stuff. So I do see it being inherently slower. But can you give us a little bit of color on the governance process?
Well, it can be slower, or it could be faster, depending on exactly what you're doing. Because I think that decision process in a democratic network is always going to be a little slower than in an optimal centralized company. But the optimal centralized company never lasts very long, right? And you could see the Google founders were on it for a little while, but they retired quite a while ago, and Google has become a sort of stultified bureaucracy right now, right? So, I mean, and Microsoft, I mean, the reason they've taken a lead now is because they bought OpenAI, right? But it's not because they managed to maintain that innovative fire within Microsoft. So I think one advantage of a decentralized network is it doesn't have to get stale in the way that companies seem to ossify into bureaucracies. And I think Linux has not gotten stale, right? The kernel team is run by a bunch of old guys, but you have so much innovation, so many new things. I mean, Linux is dominating the robotics world now, right? And Linus Torvalds doesn't have to know anything about robots. So, I mean, one advantage is decentralized processes don't seem to ossify the way that centralized ones do once they reach a certain size and maturity. I think another advantage is diversity. I mean, you can bring in incredibly diverse expertise. You don't have to fall prey to groupthink. Like, right. if you go around to Google or Microsoft, they're amazingly super brilliant people, and I know a lot of them, but you do tend to accumulate people who all think the same right. way. And then the process of bringing in people with a very different way of thinking is laborious. There's all these non-disclosure agreements. And then if you want to start working with Google's code base, it takes 6 months just to understand all the proprietary stuff that they've built that you would never even start to see if you weren't working for them. So I think pulling in diverse expertise is much easier in a decentralized modality. And that will get more and more important as you approach singularity, as things change and pivot with greater and greater and greater frequency. That said, I would say no one has really made the DAO work as a governance mechanism the way it was supposed to yet, which is something that's gone more slowly than I'd hoped since we found singularity. I mean, to be honest, I'd wanted to open SingularityNet fully to DAO-based governance by now. We haven't done it. I mean, the SingularityNet Foundation, we do have token holders who can vote, and they voted on some very, very major mm-hmm. things. But still, I'm running things as a sort of benevolent dictator. I mean, the token holders could vote. They could make if 90% of them said I should quit, I would quit, yeah. right? But fortunately, I'm popular so far. But we haven't really gotten DAO-based governance to work the way we want. Almost every project that's called a DAO is in fact governed by like five guys who founded the project and own most of the tokens, right? I mean, it really hasn't worked the way we wanted. And we're doing a sort of mini conference online within SingularityNet ecosystem probably next month, aimed at sort of rallying together the community toward the project of really turning SNET into a fully DAO-based governance thing. So we do have something called deep funding, where we mint a bunch of new tokens each month, a decreasing amount each month. 30% of those go into a pool called deep funding, where basically community members propose projects and other community members vote on those projects. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit like Cardano's Catalyst program. The best proposed projects get tokens, but it's a larger percent of our tokens than Cardano was put into Catalyst. And we've tried really hard to have the vote not be dominated by whales. Like, I haven't voted on any of the proposals because I don't want my own tokens to influence things. Mm-hmm. So we've been experimenting there with various funky voting mechanisms, like reputation weighted voting and quadratic voting. So it's not purely $1 one vote. Like, people with more tokens get more vote, but like proportional to the square root of the number of tokens they have. And you have to have some reputation of being a good actor in the community for your vote to count. So we're trying in the deep funding initiative to refine the democratic governance mechanisms so that maybe a year from now or something, we can roll them out across SingularityNet as a whole. Because, you know, we may be only a few years, we could be 2 or 3 years from the big breakthrough to having real human level AGI. And I want to have things with full democratic governance before that point. So there's really is no one in.
Right. It needs to have a solid, strong foundation.
Yeah. It's hard because, I mean, you know how the crypto community is, right? I mean, the vast majority of people are good actors, and vast majority of our AGIX token holders, you know, they bought the token because they want to use it to access the thinking machine once it once it's developed, and they want to promote our project. But there's always going to be a small number of actors who are just in it for rapid personal gain at any cost and without ethics or legality or whatever. So, I mean, managing governance to defend against bad actors is a subtle thing, yeah. And we want to make sure we've got that worked out well before we completely open up the governance and the platform.
Fantastic. So yeah, it's a work in progress, as every crypto project is. Even Bitcoin. I mean, we've had plenty of Bitcoin developers on here saying, you know, we're not even close to being done with the final vision of what Bitcoin is, right? It's there's so many, you know, nuances and developments that still need to occur. So we're all still growing.
There are. I mean, Bitcoin is slow to develop for governance reasons more than anything else. Whereas the advantage of building new tokenomic infrastructures is at least you don't have a sort of legacy code problem. You can kind of rip through things faster. So I mean, I think Bitcoin will certainly be there through the singularity as a very interesting asset class. Mm-hmm. But I think even Ethereum is a bit bogged down by the need to maintain legacy code. And I've been pleased by how fast we can proceed, like with Hypercycle on the blockchain infrastructure side. But it's just because we're building from scratch, and then you can go as fast as you can type, right? But yeah, there's on the one hand we're at an early stage. On the other hand, there's a sort of window now to have a big influence on the world before a technological singularity hits, and while the big tech companies are weakened, right? So there's a window of opportunity for the crypto world to grab, and I'm really hoping we will be able to succeed in that. I mean, it's at least seems plausible.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I just have a couple closing questions, and I just want to get a little bit about your market outlook. You know, we're here in March of 2023, recording this podcast, and of course, nothing that you or I say is investment advice or financial advice. But you know, we're in the kind of maybe the transitional stages from a bear market to maybe a bull market. Do you have any hot takes on where we're at and where we're headed with just crypto prices and market caps?
I mean, no doubt volatility will continue. You can say that's easier to predict the volatility than the price, right? So I'm long crypto volatility for sure. But I don't think we're going to see long bear markets anymore. I think that as the technological singularity approaches, things will just change faster and faster. So I would say I called this quasi bull market or whatever we're experiencing. Like last fall, a bunch of my colleagues were like, "Oh shit, we may be down for like two more years." I'm like, "Look, the world has a very short memory these days, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, seasons will change very quickly. Even for specific projects, like we have a project called Kajito, which is a unique kind of fractional reserve algorithmic stablecoin. So it's not pinned to fiat; it's actually pinned to progress on cleaning up the environment. So it's like it's very stable. It's because that's like slowly, linearly advancing. So you can pin the price of a token to indices of environmental progress. That's much harder to manipulate than the fiat currency. In a way, it's stabler than fiat, right? So we created this last year, and then Luna crashed, right? And everyone was like, well, you might as well kill that project because no one will ever invest in an algorithmic stablecoin again, right? And I'm just like, well, just wait. Things are changing faster and faster. People have very short memory. And now we've got loads of – we're building that project. We have some investment into that project. I mean, we're doing fine, and I think this is going to – it'll launch on Cardano chain probably later this year as a new sort of asset with the algorithmic stabilization done by AI running on SingularityNet. But I mean, that indicates that the seasons change faster and
very quickly
and faster. So, I mean, I think we're definitely going to see more and more and more success for those crypto projects that are building real stuff and have real users for products. But
it will be
foolish to think it's going to be a steady increase in terms of token exchange rates, right? That seems not to be the way the crypto world rolls.
Yes, it's pure volatility pretty much all the time. I have one final question.
It has gone up over time. It's just psychologically, when things are down, no one believes it will ever go up. When things are up, no one believes it will ever go down, right? So the human psychology, human psychology remains kind of the same as the waves of innovation get faster and faster and faster as a singularity approaches.
I hope AGIX and SingularityNet can make me a better trader, using AGI.
Yeah, I mean, Singularity DAO, of course, is working on that. And we've been doing a bunch of stuff there with the AI-based algorithmic trading of baskets of altcoins. And we may be releasing from there some AI-driven on-chain analytics tools also that would help other people with their own trading systems. I think this is an area where we need the infrastructure to mature a bit before it can really, really come into its own. Because right now, like, you can't do high-frequency trading on DEXs, right? The frictional cost is too high. You could do on centralized exchanges, but those have other issues, which everyone knows about. Things tend to be manipulated in various ways, right? So, I mean, you really like
counterparty
doing
risk.
Things on DEXs, but they're slow and expensive now. So, it's going to mature in the next couple of years. So, yeah, I think AI driven trading and AI driven analytics to help folks with trading is going to be. It's going to be a big area, and Singularity DAO will be doing more and more with it.
I'm excited to stay tuned on that. And finally, last question I had for you was just, you know, out of everybody that you've kind of come into contact to within the crypto ecosystem, you know, crypto founders, investors, whoever, scientists, you know, what's one person who you'd love to give a shout out to that you really respect their work, what they're doing, and you're inspired by?
I'll go for Trent McConaughey from Ocean Protocol, and then the obvious Charles Hoskinson from Cardano. I mean, I think these guys have been deploying deep algorithmic thinking in the real world in quite fantastic ways.
Love it. Well, man, it's been a pleasure having you, Dr. Goertzel. We really appreciate your time. We hope to have you back on literally whenever. This was one of my favorite conversations, and it really satiated my level of excitement and my appetite to learn about AI and AGI. So thank you again. And again, hopefully everybody who's watching is able to go to SingularityNet, check out the apps, or follow you guys on Twitter.
Thanks a lot.
Take care, everybody.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.